nothing's changed. And then the stupid people that got duped by Trump.
Pedro, are you falling into the Matrix? What's happening? Are you turning into getting sucked into Tron world?
PFT Media.
Can the eye ties tie together? We're going to find out in the 19th century as we talk about Italian unification. This is Half True History. And welcome to Half True History, where we take the legends of yesterday, mix them with the facts of today, and come up with a story we think you'll like. I am, of course, your professor for the night, Dan P. And controlling the airwaves, as always, is our super producer, Chris Crespo.
Hey, I'm Chris Crespo and Chris Crespo. That's very close.
I got us there.
We haven't recorded in what, like 4 weeks, 3-4 weeks?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, it's a warm up. No, more than that.
And, of course, joining me is the Count Cavour to my Victor Emmanuel, Pedro Lima. Oh.
Then you were going to go with Count Chocula. That's the only count I know.
Well, we're going to talk about this count today. That
count from Sesame Street.
And what about Count Dante?
Who?
You guys don't know about Count Dante?
From Count of Monte Cristo?
No, from like Detroit, Michigan. He's a guy from the 80s, I think, who...
Oh, no.
He's like a Frank Dukes character type who claims to have like won all these death tournaments, and he's a secret agent and a kung fu master.
Oh, is this the guy who like made up the stories of the Kumite?
He's like that guy, but he's not that guy. But he's very similar.
Very similar, okay.
Yeah, look him up, Count Dante.
Right.
That's wait, there's another guy other than the Bloodsport guy than Frank Dukes that made up some shit about the Kumite?
Yeah, there's another guy out there making up kung fu stories.
I love it.
And his name's Count Dante.
Frank Dukes has the fastest knockout in
Kumite in history. Yeah, absolutely.
Kumite. Fastest roundhouse kick.
And fastest punch.
Yeah, which is weird because in 1970, whatever, who is registering the speed on a roundhouse kick?
That's what the monks are doing.
Yeah, the monks.
So we're going to, Count Basie, too. There's another count before we get going.
There we go.
Ooh, Count Basie, I know that one.
We know Count Basie. So, obviously, we are reporting from a nation divided still right now. A little bit of pushback here and there from each side. You know, it's hard to swallow. It's a very Linus and the Great Pumpkin moment where, really hard to admit that there is no Great Pumpkin. I mean, there is. He's in Mar-a-Lago, but.
Mm-hmm. Take that.
But, uniting a country is hard. It's very hard. Not everyone can do it. And then sometimes it takes several attempts to unite a country. We're actually quite lucky that we got it right after, what, the second time, third time around? In Italy, it took them a long time to get united.
Oh, is that what we're tapping into?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Italian unification. And when Italy finally becomes a country.
So we're giving people a glimpse of what's happening right now. The fall of the Roman Empire. pretty much.
And right.
Get ready, what's going to happen? Hey, it's a happy episode again on Half True History.
I mean,
cling on to hope, wrap it around your neck, and pass out in the couch, everybody.
It's it requires organization in order to really unify a country, and commitment, and those are two things. Those are two traits that the Italians are not known for. Minus organized crime.
I want to talk about one. Do you have anything on the Italian mafia in the future? Because when I was in Italy, there's a lot of people that is like, yo, listen, we got together just to, you know, cover whatever the government was not doing for us, kind of.
Right.
Deal. So
it was.
We did talk about this, didn't we?
I mean, we didn't do a whole one. We didn't do a whole thing on. The mafia, but we can do a mafia a bit later because it comes right after Italian unification.
And I'm not talking American mafia, American Italian mafia.
Yeah, we could do that. So to bring in some context here, we talked about, Rome falls in 476 CE. It's done. And then for the next 1400 years, there is no Italy. It's divided up amongst a bunch of little city states and other more powerful countries keeping it separate. So that boot, is all divided up. So there's the city state. So each city state is its own nation. So it's like the nation of Venice, the nation of Florence, the nation of Milan. You know, and in the center, you have the papal states, which is basically Rome and all that area in central Italy that just listens to whatever the Pope says. And then the southern part of Italy and Sicily is owned by the Spanish. You know, and it's been that way for a while. Now in the Italian city-states, you know, the Renaissance was the start of it. Just keep competing with each other back and forth. And the Pope has always played those mind games, those political games, in order to keep them fighting each other, and because he doesn't want them unified.
Ooh, what kind of games?
I mean, basically, just kind of like a Louis the 14th fight for my favoritism type of thing.
This best salami I had is from the nation of Genoa. Oh, here comes the Florentian people getting all uptight.
Right, exactly. Like, he would do things like that.
That
he
type of shit. Players.
He would support some princes against other princes. Yeah, and this was the way it was from the Renaissance until we get to the 1700s.
So the Pope is running like a kumite, pretty much, just putting Italian on Italian crime.
Yeah, absolutely. And because last thing he wants is he doesn't want a united Italy, because that means Italy will have a king, and that means Italian loyalty will be split on the king of Italy or the Pope.
Wait, then we're going to go in a king mode?
At this point, they wanted a united kingdom like everyone else. There's no republics yet in the 1700s. They wanted to be united. They wanted a king at first. And the Pope didn't want that. He didn't want to compete with someone else in the same city.
Are the city-states ruled by, like, their own kings, or do they have different names? Princes?
No, by their own princes' families. Like, in for example, in Florence, it was the Medici family that ruled. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In Venice, they had the Doge, and the Doge was the we know about the Doge, of course. It was the most powerful banker at the time, and he took over. So it all depended on the city state. Sometimes it was hereditary. Sometimes it was through an electoral process of a group of elites. But obviously no one knows the idea of uniting a kingdom without a monarch. I mean, that's just not, no one's done that yet, really, for that size of a kingdom like that. So, you know, the assumption was it was going to be a king. The assumption was the capital was going to be Rome, obviously. And so now the Pope didn't want his rival in the same city fighting for praise and attention.
How were they going to determine who was going to be the king? Like, who made the best sauce or something? Or like,
yeah, who has the biggest mustache, for sure.
Oh, word.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, the curl the ends. Yeah.
Yeah, you had to wax it from your city and the first mustache to reach Rome, I think. That's
there you go. The first mustache to go from coast to coast. And that's north to south.
But that was another Pedro brought up a good point. Yeah, all the noble families, obviously they wanted to be the one who united Italy to become the king, so there was fighting amongst them for a while. And they don't get a taste of the idea of unification until the 1800s. And that's when the French Revolution went on and Napoleon started conquering. And Napoleon conquers Italy, and for the first time ever, he unifies Italy into one district for his empire. So the Italians, for the first time, actually have a unified country, albeit underneath the French emperor, but they didn't mind it so much because Napoleon was ethnically Italian anyway.
Oh, that's not so bad. It's like a homecoming.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. They were very happy with it. Then, of course, after Napoleon's empire falls, Congress of the most powerful men in Europe meet. They split up Italy. They split up Germany again because they don't want rivals. Austria wants to be the big guy in Central Europe. They don't want any rivals. So they keep Italy split. They take the northern part, like Venice. They take that area. This will be under Austrian control. The Pope still has his papal states. The Spanish control the south. There's very few independent Italian cities, with the exception of Sardinia, Piedmont, which is one kingdom, Sardinia, Piedmont. And, of course, you have the Florentines. You have some, in the Milan areas like that. So you're looking at, like, northwest Italy is where you're going to find most of your free states. Well, the group that liked Italian unification, they start forming an underground to start up this unification. This is as early as the 1820s, and they call themselves the Carbonari.
The Carbonari? Okay. Yes.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, because they ran away a lot.
No, I just figured it's because of carbon, the underground.
Yeah, no. Oh, okay. I was going with they ran away a lot, so they call them chicken carbonari all the time. But underground carbon, I like that one too. I didn't even think of that.
It's an extra layer.
It's a good one. It's led by a writer named Giuseppe Mazzini. He's going to be kind of the figurehead of unification. I would say he's like the Jose Marti of Italy. Yeah, more or less. I'd say the Jose Marti would be a good writes about Italian unification, participates in the beginning, but isn't there for the full grand unification thing. They try to rebel in 1830, and the Austrians beat them up.
Oh.
And they realize... Yeah, and he goes into exile, and they realize they can't win unless they have allies. Little Italian states like that can't beat Austria. They need an ally. So they start to think, well, maybe the French can help us. Maybe, right?
Okay.
Right.
Napoleon's still around?
Napoleon III is around.
The third, okay.
Yeah, Napoleon III. He just recreated another French empire. It's 1848 now. He's called Napoleon III, even though he is actually not blood related to Napoleon at all. He was his step nephew.
Was he even named Napoleon, or he just jacked the name Napoleon?
Yeah, he just jacked the name. His name was Louis.
So it's like a professional wrestler situation where he's like, I'm the third, the great grandson of Napoleon. But
yeah,
he's Mr. Wrestling 3. Yeah,
gotcha.
So this big push in 1848, it's a big rebellion. They Napoleon agrees, and even the Pope is on board this time. He's like, all right, yeah, let's have a unified Italy. This is a new Pope, a new liberal Pope that was being elected, and he promises the King of Sardinia, Piedmont, will do it, you know? So this revolution happens, going well initially, and then the Pope changes his mind. He's like, you know what? I don't want to support this anymore.
Fight Club.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Mazzini and his rebels, they're already in Rome. They just take over Rome and they set up a republic. But the French, then they come in, they betray the Italians because they want to get in good with the Pope. So the French come to help the Pope and they destroy the Roman Republic that was built by Mazzini. And then Milan holds out for about 5 days and then the Austrians crush them. So 1848, another disaster. Italians weren't really known for their fighting skills.
Why not?
That requires discipline. That requires listening to people.
Do you think being divided up into a bunch of much smaller city-states also hurts them? Because they can't, like have any sort of unified military response.
They're always fighting.
Yeah, they're always fighting, but on their terms. It's, you know, this is a world of mercenary armies. They're not used to being a professional army.
So they really don't have it in them. To fight in other armies, whole armies.
Yeah, most Italians don't have it in them. I mean, we're really good at insulting people's mothers and waving our hands, but as far as like grabbing weapons and conquering nations, not so much. So again, the guys go into exile. And one of Mazzini's closest generals, he's going to go into exile. He's going to go all the way to Brazil.
Oh.
Yeah. His name is Giuseppe again. Giuseppe Garibaldi.
You may know him from his chocolates.
The Garibaldi chocolates. He goes to Brazil, and there he actually meets his wife, Anita Silva. And she's a badass. She actually trains him because he knows how to fight like Italian style, which is city warfare here and there. But she knows how to fight Brazilian.
I've seen this movie. This is the one she trains him in the beach.
Yeah. Manana way, manana way, manana way, manana way, manana. People can't see at home, but both Pedro and Dan immediately broke out into djembes at their respective homes. It was amazing.
Absolutely.
You got wet and shit. Need a broomstick with springs.
She teaches him the way of capoeira.
What was that movie, Crespo?
Only the Strong.
Thank you.
With Mark Dacascos.
But there's another movie that's Only the Strong, but it's about like jazz musicians, right?
Maybe. That you might have lost me. I'm not sure.
But Mark Dacascos from Iron Chef, everybody.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah. So Anita Silva trains him. You know, she brings in her cousins, Vonderlei and Anderson. They help out training him. They're all there. But she trains him like really how to fight like a gorilla against major bigger armies like that. How to shoot, go away, how to really ride and fire from horseback, because that, you know, it was something the Brazilian rebels knew how to do. He ends up marrying her.
Heck yeah, he married that. Find you a woman who does both.
Right. He ends up staying in Brazil for a while. He's like a real humanitarian figure. He's fighting for, there's a war called the War of the Ragamuffins, War of the Farrapos in Brazil. That's what the farmers are fighting over for the rights. He's there fighting for the farmers to get their property rights against the Brazilian government.
Wait, the Ragamuffins?
Ragamuffins, yeah.
That's what they call them?
That's what it translates to, Farrapos, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was about to say, it's like, how the hell did they get that term?
Yeah, no, but if you're typing on an English Wikipedia, you're going to see the Ragamuffin War. But it's War of Farrapos. And then after that, he goes down to a part of Brazil, southern Brazil, that's Hispanic and doesn't want to be part of Portuguese Brazil anymore. So he helps those rebels fight and break away and make their own country. And he is one of the founding generals of the country of Uruguay.
Wow.
Yeah. Easy. So, yeah, he helps Uruguay get their independence. He helps the farmers in Brazil. Unfortunately, his wife dies during the Uruguay independence movement. She's killed in battle. And after that, he kind of goes on a little bit of a soul-searching type of thing. He goes to America.
Oh, good place. To Queens. To find.
Yeah. I mean, where else, right?
Yeah.
So he go, yeah, he goes to New York, as every Italian does. And it's the 1850s, and he starts helping Italian immigrants, because there's a few coming. It's not the big wave yet, but there are a few coming. But he starts adjusting Italian immigrants to America, making a lot of contacts there, and makes a lot of friends in America. In fact, later on, it's Garibaldi who is responsible during the Civil War. Garibaldi's going to come over after his unification, and he's going to train the Italian immigrants to fight and in the Civil War and call it the Garibaldi Division. So he gets all those Italian immigrants to join the Union. So, I mean, yeah, he was really, you know, he's really popular. He liked New York. And so he's just waiting for his right moment. Mazzini is in London, still writing about freedom and unification. And now we go to the other two guys. There are four fathers of Italy, as they're called. There's Victor Emmanuel II, who is the king of Piedmont. And then there is Camillo Benso, who is Count Cavour. That's his title, the Count of Cavour. Count Cavour is the prime minister. Okay. They want unification just like Mazzini and Garibaldi, but they don't want a republic like Mazzini and Garibaldi. They want a constitutional monarchy.
Okay.
So yeah, they'll give Mazzini and them, you want a Senate? Fine. You want a Congress? Fine. But I want the hat. He wants to be the one that becomes the first king of Italy since the fall of Rome, basically.
Who, Victor Emmanuel or Benzo?
Piedmont wants Emmanuel.
Okay.
Yeah, Vittorio Emmanuel II. He's the king of Piedmont. Benzo is the prime minister. His job is to facilitate this. So while Garibaldi's finding himself, this is the 1850s. The two monarchists are planning their move. They're going to go with the French strategy again. We got to ally with France. We really can't do this alone. And maybe we can get the English involved because nobody messes with the English. So maybe they can help out. You know, they're already in the Mediterranean controlling Gibraltar and the Nile River. So it wouldn't be too hard for them to sail over to Sicily and give them some help. So Piedmont it puts it all on Cavour. Cavour is like the mastermind behind all of this. His idea is to volunteer in a war that he knows on the side he knows is going to win, which is a strategy Italians have been adopting for years and still adopt.
To pick the winning side?
We always wait. Who's going to win? That guy? Okay, do it. Yeah.
Did he just show up? Hey, buddy, I believed in you.
So right now, the British and the French are beating up on the Russians and the Crimean War. And so Piedmont bravely offers a battalion of great Italian soldiers to help the French and the British fight the Russians. They are probably, you know, are they effective? Who knows? They were just there. Like, I don't think they really changed the tide of war or anything like that. But they were there. And if you're on the Allies' side, once the war is over, you get to sit at the big table. So really this was making sure that Piedmont got a seat at the big negotiating table once the war was over. And then you can start making favors and schmoozing with the big world leaders. And that's where we get his one-on-one with Napoleon III. And they start discussing things. And Napoleon actually agrees with Victor Emmanuel that he's going to help this time. He promises. And the reason he's so agreeable, remember, patriots come in all forms. Okay? I want to point that out. The reason he's so agreeable to the Italian cause is that before the Crimean War ends, Cavour has sent his 19-year-old cousin to France to seduce Napoleon and become his mistress.
That's what's up.
And she does it. Virginia Oldelini. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's his mistress for about 2 or 3 years. And so by the time Napoleon gets to the conference room, he has a very positive opinion about Italians.
Well, the gourmand pretty much took care.
So the war is going to start. They're going to declare war on Austria. All right. Garibaldi comes back. He's going to help out. He's going to get a bunch of volunteers. He calls it his red shirts. The 1,000 guys in red shirts. Probably Versace. I'm not sure.
You're probably Versace?
Yeah.
I'm thinking all the sauce that they spilled on themselves. So that way when they bleed, you can't tell.
You know, for any other army, I would agree with you, but I'm pretty sure that's if they spilled wine or sauce on.
Yeah. Yeah. Garibaldi probably said, you know what? We need white shirts. And they're like, but I kind of like, I spill the sauce.
Okay. If we're going to keep having spaghetti night for this army, we got to have red shirts.
Okay.
Garibaldi attacks in the south. He liberates southern Italy from the Spanish. Almost at Naples, but he's got a big problem. There's a huge army. He's totally cornered against the sea. You know, it looks like the southern Italian campaign is going to be over. And out of nowhere, the British Navy does show up and just blasts the Spanish and the Austrians and destroys their navy. Like, didn't even tell them they were coming.
Surprise.
Yep. It was just like
Luke Skywalker in.
Yeah, they just basically, come in, Skywalker in, basically. And I don't know, they just, for some reason, they found it more advantageous, I guess, if they gave the island to the Dagos. So Southern Italy's all...
Wait, hold up. That's not a derogatory term?
It is, but I can say it.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, but you can't, Pedro, so watch yourself.
Yeah.
It's one of the more mild ones.
Is it? Because I've heard it like spewed out, but I mean you can grab anything and just throw
it
with.
Say it now, well, it's slang for they used to call all the Italians or all the Mediterraneans Diego in America. So it's a slang of Diego.
Okay.
But yeah, that's really what it's not as bad as
the so it's a name?
Yeah, Diego.
Diego. Oh, that's dumb.
Yeah, it's a slur on Diego. That's Dago. So that's why I was like, and Guinea, that's because that's how little they worked for. So Guinea and Dago, they're not really like, they're like, you know, kind of dick, but not really offensive. Yeah. Yeah. It's WAP. That's the big one.
But that's, what is it?
It doesn't mean without papers.
No, I thought it was white American Protestant or something like that, but no.
No, that's WASP.
Okay.
Yeah. WAP is another slang for Giappo, which Italian means thug, cretin, slime bag.
Oh, so thug?
Yeah.
You WAP.
Yeah.
Cardi B took that one over, baby. Everybody knows what WAP is now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it is, really. It's probably the most offensive because it harkens back to this idea that
Ben Shapiro does think it's offensive.
Right. They thought Italians were wife beaters and angry and just scumbags. So that's what it all goes to.
Well,
I mean, most of them
let
were.
Let the record show.
Hey, stereotypes exist for a reason.
Yes.
And then we became Republicans when we came over here. I don't understand my people.
That's the money. That's the money side.
I don't understand it. Mm-hmm.
Small government, more money. That's that side.
Right.
That
makes sense.
What do you mean I can't charge $7 for a garlic knot? Who's stopping me? The Democrats. Oh.
Finally, Italy is almost united. Garibaldi meets up with the Piedmont army, agrees to work with him, agrees for a constitutional monarchy at the end of this. Okay. He's like, all right, we'll work on Republic later on. We'll do constitutional monarchy. They're about to declare, and they declare Italy by 1861 a country, with slight exceptions.
Oh, okay.
the French have gone back on their word, and now they won't let Italy take Rome.
So the French were going to stay with Rome.
Right.
And the Italians can have everything around it.
Everything and one other city they can't have.
Okay.
Because at this point, Napoleon had now entered an agreement with Austria because he was invading Mexico.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know. So the agreement was Napoleon would drop his support of the Italians and support Austria's claim to Venice.
Okay.
So now we have, so Italy is a country, yes. Victor Emmanuel II is the king of Italy, but Italy does not include Rome or Venice yet.
Wow, that's odd.
Yeah.
That's too, I mean, I get Venice, but damn, Rome?
Mm-hmm. They still declare Rome the capital, even though they don't own it.
Like, they didn't want Milan, which is closer to France. No, we want Rome.
No, you want Rome. But they still declare the capital.
We like that Colosseum shit you guys got.
They want it. They want that seat of power. They want that heritage, that history. And I'm oversimplifying things, obviously. The Italian unification itself, the military tactics used, the organization. If you want a great reenactment of how the war looked and how the Italian military was, just watch any Three Stooges pie fight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a miracle that they unified.
Just constant bickering and...
Yeah, like you've got the ridiculous opera playing in the background type of scene as they're all slapping each other and falling over things. Yeah, it really was just a Keystone Cop war. Again, they're not known for their fighting, so they continue on. So Italy officially is formed 1861. They finally get Rome and Venice in 1871, 10 years later.
Okay. How did that come about? Lease expired?
Prussia was ready to unite Germany.
Okay.
And Prussia said, hey, Italians, distract the Austrians while we beat the crap out of everyone for the next 10 years, and we'll return the favor. So the Italians distract the Austrians, the Germans knock out Denmark, knock out Austria, and then beat up the French. Okay, and now we have a unified Germany in 1871. Ooh. Yeah. And that's that, you know, that's Otto von Bismarck doing all that stuff. Big spiky helmet and mustache.
Again, the mustache. Oh,
I seen that guy.
Yeah. And so as a favor to the Italians for being the meat shields, being the distractions that they promised they would be, he told Austria and France, yeah, you're giving them Venice and Rome. And that was it.
So it wasn't even, wow. So the Germans gave the Italians Italy.
Right. And it's that friendship is the reason why that leads into the world wars. Because they've had this, they've helped each other unify, technically.
Yeah. So when Hitler needed a little helping hand, Mussolini's like, I got you, bro.
Right. And yeah, that's the history of the Italian, because up until this point, the Italians and Germans never got along because, you know, one was Roman Empire, one was German barbarians in their history. And all of a sudden, these two realized if we just start working together, we can run Europe. Well, the Germans ran Europe. The Italians just made the clothes.
Yeah.
Nice clothes, though.
Very
nice. Yeah, they did.
So, and that's how Italy was formed.
Wow, dude, that's so, like, I want to say, like, anti-dramatic kind of deal? Like, it was just the German just said, all right, here.
Yep.
Well, they did have to work for it for a decade of warring.
They were playing decoy, though. They weren't even doing anything for their country. They're just playing decoy while the Germans got power.
But it was for their country, though, in the long run, to get those cities back.
I mean, it really was the... You had to wait for your big brother to get your baseball back.
Yeah, yeah. Or he showed up to school to help you get it back from the bullies. Exactly. Yeah.
Do Italians hate when you bring up that fact?
That they were given?
If it wasn't for the German...
Not so much.
No.
we're not nationalistic like that. We're nationalistic about other things, but not about like military victories. Like Italian nationalism is all about the better food, the better clothes, the better culture. So, and we know we got the Germans beat on all three of those. So,
oh, take that, German listeners. We love your Wiener Schnitzel.
Yeah, bro. Polka music's nice. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, polka's fun too. Yeah, yeah. We got Weird Al Yankovic. I mean, come on.
Yeah, right. But yeah, it's a little anticlimactic. It's, you know, there's no big final war. There's no Yorktown that gets America. There's no, you know, Battle of Puebla that's for, you know, gets the French to.
No. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just like, hey,
yeah,
we did our thing. No, can we get room? Thank you for giving us room. Thank you.
Yeah, and we just have a unification day celebration, and that's kind of it. It's not. It's more. It's an observance more than it is a celebration.
What happened to the king guy? Were they? Was there ever a king when they got Italy without Roman?
Yeah, he was. Victor Emmanuel was going to be king of Italy. He was still king of Italy.
So when did they get rid of this kingship?
World War II.
Oh, that's when it ended.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, the king of Italy at the time, they didn't forgive him for welcoming Mussolini and putting him in power.
Okay.
So they were like, you know what? No more kings. You lost. And then it became a republic. And then again, it became another republic. And then it became
they never tried to bring that king stuff back.
No. They just, they like their sleazy politicians as presidents. They're very good with Il Cavador running over and over again. You know, we like our porn star representatives. Everything's good.
I was just looking at the map of Italy and be like, man, that's so strategically dumb.
Yeah.
Just be placed in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you like the Colosseum.
Yeah, no, it makes no sense in that it was more historical than anything. Like you said, it should have been in the north. The north was more industrialized. The north was wealthier.
Yeah, they could have even moved the Vatican up there and just be like, no, you guys are moving.
Yeah, exactly. So, little fun fact. It's called the Risorgimento, the unification and reorganizing of Italy. And one of the things they do is a very socialist idea. Is all that land that the Spanish owned in the south, which was controlled by these big dons kind of landowners, mm-hmm. they broke it all up and gave it to the people. And that's how my family got their olive farm in Castiglione di Sicilia.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We participated and we got a little bit of land out of it.
Still have it?
No, we sold it to come to America.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I think we still have the cabin. I think like the little cottage area. So I think the cottage is still there, but we sold the farm. I don't know. I haven't talked to my Italian cousins in a while.
Oh, jeez. Hey, you guys still got the cabin?
Who knows? I haven't heard from them since the COVID lockdown, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. Are they still over there or?
I don't know. My contact to find that out is in New York and he's kind of locked down too, so yeah, eventually I'll figure it out. Someone from Jersey will tell me, like they always do.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
It's always that cousin from Jersey,
like, hey, you hear about Frankie?
Yeah,
you still got the cottage.
I think we're good to put the wheels down to say arrivederci to our loving fans out there.
Buonasera.
Mangiano.
Make sure that you are, of course, speaking of family business, listening to all of our PFT family. Wow.
Yes. Yes, woo! The PFT family, pftmedia.com. Still going pretty strong, guys. Going well.
Rocking it out. Simon's still rocking it?
Absolutely. Yeah, we just did episode 168, I think. Oof. Yeah, yeah, we're going strong.
Simon, you got the meat. The meat limit?
The meat limit.
Such a misleading show.
Yeah. Yeah, your movies, entertainment, and TV limit.
Yeah.
Still got that jazz program?
The Major Scale, they're in pre-production on season three, season okay. four. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they have a whole bunch of interviews in the can that they just need to put together. So we got all sorts of stuff coming. Right. Super exciting. All
right. And then the King of the Helm, Crespo Diso.
Yes, a little bit Crespo Diso. Check it out, guys. Oh, and Big Ten Murphy's show. What happened?
Give Drew a big hug for me.
I will. I'm going to see him soon. Big Tim Murphy also, he distilled his show down to a political show, radicalizing rednecks.
He got tired of eating chicken sandwiches?
He's tired. He ate all the chicken sandwiches. He reviewed them all. And then now every Monday, new show that's like an hour and a half on state of the world politically. And it's from like the more leftist side, but still being angry about everything. And saying how everyone's bad at their whatever they're trying to do. It's great. Okay. Great show.
Yeah, I'll talk about that. Cool.
Revolution.
Yep. Bella Chow, Bella Chow.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah. Yep. We're good at writing the song, not so good at the fighting. We'll write the song.
There's a show, Casa de Papel on Netflix, and they use that song.
Oh, okay.
Money Heist. It's so good, and man, I want to do a quick TV review. I know Crespo got to go, but it's a show that was in Spain, and it was floundering. And then Netflix went on a grab. I need shows. They grabbed it. Netflix picked it up. People on Netflix loved it. They saw that the ratings went up. The production company's like, holy shit, we're gonna make a season two.
My parents love that show.
Oh, it's so good. It's so it's cheesy, but it's still entertaining kind of thing. So
right, cool. I'll check it out. Is it dubbed or subbed?
You can do either one.
Oh, cool. I like that. All right, guys. Well, like I said, buona sera. We are heading out here for Pedro Lima and Chris Crespo. And myself, this has been Half True History, and we'll see you on the next page.
Adios.
Peace.
Je t'envoie mes mots de là où je suis. Oh, bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Comme tous les efforts, tous les écrits n'ont plus de sens, n'ont plus de prix.
A PFT Media Production.